Oh, say can we see by the one light in all our earth to embrace at the call of all nations where our children can play in a world without war where we stand hand in hand in the grace of creation where the rivers run clean through the forests of green where the cities stand tall in the clear skies of freedom. Oh, say do our hearts sing out for harmony and love forever on the planet of our birth, blessed with peace on Earth.
Hello and welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and you can hear us live at accesssacramento.org, or you can listen to this program and past programs at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com. Today's program includes What is the Future of Journalism and Internet Access? Josh Silver, co-founder and CEO of Free Press and a blogger, attempts to answer these questions. And then, after that, Charles Ferguson on the Charlie Rose Show. Charles Ferguson talks about his documentary Inside Job and the economic crash. Charles Ferguson is the founder and president of Representational Pictures, Inc., and the director and producer of No End in Sight, The American Occupation of Iraq.
Good evening. And welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, the place where you're in the know. Find us on the internet at commonwealthclub.org. I'm Louis Friedberg, senior reporter with California Watch and your moderator for the program. This program is being held in association with the Commonwealth Club's InForum division. It is now my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Josh Silver, president and CEO of the Free Press, who will be discussing the future of journalism and internet access. Josh Silver is the president and CEO of Free Press, an eight-year-old national nonprofit organization working to reform the media. Through education, organizing, and advocacy, it is working to promote diverse and independent media ownership, strong public media, quality journalism, and universal access to communications. Josh was previously campaign manager for the successful Clean Elections in Arizona ballot initiative there and director of development for the cultural arm of the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C. He has published widely on media, telecommunications, campaign finance, and other public policy issues. Please welcome Josh Silver.
Thank you, Louis. Thanks, everybody, for coming tonight, and thanks television and radio viewers and listeners. I want to start by thanking the Commonwealth Club and George for inviting me to speak tonight. I'm truly honored to speak at such a venerated institution. I saw the list of people who have spoken before, and I almost just decided not to come and cower behind a bush somewhere. I'm here to tell you a fascinating story, and it has all the trappings of one of those page-turner paperbacks that you read on vacation. It has money, power, political scandal. Only this story is real. It's happening now, and it is the final chapter. In the end, it's going to determine the future of our democracy. I'm going to start with a real story back in 1995, and I'm 26 years old. I'm traveling in the Amazon River Basin in South America. I'm with one of my best friends named Patchen Miller. We were longtime travel companions and fellow adventurers. By the time we decided to float the headwaters of the Amazon, Patchen had already spent most of his very short life doing community service. We built a large wooden raft, and we prepared for a 1 or 2 month float down the river. We didn't know how long it would take. 3 days into the trip, we were ambushed. Patchen was shot and killed, and I was shot and left for dead. It's a true story. After a harrowing week-long odyssey, I reached Peru's capital. 7 pieces of lead were removed from my leg. The doctor kept saying, mucho suerte, very lucky, as the lead was about an inch from my leg, the artery in my leg. I came home with a powerful sense of how short and fragile this life is. I understood at a young age the importance of using my brief time on this earth wisely to do the greatest good possible, and I came home searching for the most efficient, effective way to do that. That search led me to one of the 2 most critical issues facing our country, a quiet cancer that has spread from Washington across the nation, and if it's not stopped, I believe, will destroy this amazing experiment we call the United States. After 40 years of brilliant and well-financed organizing, the political machine in Washington representing the interests of corporate and economic elites has achieved near complete control of American political discourse and policymaking. This is not a theory or opinion, this is a fact. The final blow came just over a year ago when the Supreme Court ruled in the Citizens United case that corporate funding of independent political broadcasts in elections cannot be limited under the First Amendment. That ruling has allowed an explosion of special interest spending, which was already at record levels, to soar into the stratosphere. New super PACs now take unlimited amounts of corporate money and explicitly call for the election or defeat of political candidates. Today, corporate lobbyists regularly and legally go into politicians' offices and threaten to spend millions of dollars if he or she doesn't vote with that industry. This kind of threat used to be unique to gangsters and thugs, and it has now become the status quo in Washington. Only today, instead of pushing gambling or drug cartels, the thugs are killing affordable health care, regulations that prevent financial meltdowns, and protections against global warming. The list goes on. The cancer is spreading quickly, and it marks the end of the romantic vision of America that we learned about as kids. The sweet story of a vibrant, healthy democracy, of voters that matter, of founding fathers who fought and died to ensure that decisions would not be made by monarchs or oligarchs. Before Citizens United, the U.S. political system was already a case study in the unholy alliance between economic elites and politics. After major public interest victories under FDR, and again in the 1960s and 1970s under Presidents Johnson and Nixon, industry and economic elites began building an elaborate infrastructure of influence that has grown and improved over time. They understood that reasonable regulatory oversight and progressive taxation posed a threat to their bottom line. An army of lobbyists, think tanks, PR shops, corporate-friendly media outlets, political attack groups, where they were all born and they were nurtured. Thousands of former politicians and government employees with golden Rolodexes and unparalleled access became industry's emissaries in the halls of power. The fight in Washington is often painted as an epic battle between conservatives and liberals, but in truth, it has nothing to do with left and right. It is about the largest corporations and the wealthiest Americans and their unstoppable lobbying infrastructure and campaign contributions manipulating public opinion and writing laws that increase profits and avoid taxation while destroying the very fabric of a functional economy and society. That's a mouthful. They skillfully promote the false left-right frame to discredit critics, confuse, polarize, and compel ordinary Americans to fight each other instead of the real problem. They fight to protect hedge fund tycoons' 15% tax loophole, while the gap between America's rich and poor grows greater than at any time since the Great Depression. They fight pharmaceutical price controls that would allow sick, poor people to have medicine. They fight against living wages that would lift millions out of poverty. They fight clean air and clean water. They fight anything and everything that might reduce profits, no matter the cost to our society and our sanity. And they are so powerful that no matter how much public support an issue enjoys, no matter how much, it ends up either as a watered-down half measure or is blocked outright while its proponents are painted as raving socialists. Watching this cancer overtake our government, the people's government, leaves me with many of the same feelings of grief that I felt when the disease took my mother's life last year. A deep, abiding fear, compounded by the joy and innocence of my beautiful 18-month-old daughter. How will her life be if we don't fix this? I wish I had an answer to that question, but I don't. So I'm going to ask you guys another. Let's say for a moment that we could fix this problem of corporate and elite control of Washington. Let's say for a moment that we could reform the political system and make it so that people and not industry control government. What good is a reformed political system if the people don't know what's going on? What good is it if they're not sufficiently exposed to critical journalism and fact-based information? What happens if the public gets their information from a media system mired in mind-numbing sensationalism, celebrity, partisan shouting matches, and a political culture obsessed with soundbites, personalities, horse races, and profit, instead of substance and the relentless pursuit of the truth? The answer is the sister issue to the corporate control of government. It is the other critical issue and the subject of today's talk. U.S. media are shedding journalists en masse, replacing expensive critical reporting with ever-thinning newspapers, profitable but polarizing television and radio opinion shows, superficiality, and bellowing talking heads. In its wake is a breathtakingly uninformed and propagandized citizenry. Vulnerable to the most Orwellian manipulations by ideologues, public relation firms, and campaign operatives, politicians and industries with the biggest money to buy advertisements, PR firms, attack groups, and think tanks win hearts, minds, and votes. The Pew Center for People and the Press reports that despite the rise of the internet, the vast majority of Americans still get their news and information from commercial television. And if you've watched it lately or listened to commercial radio, you know why our national discourse and our politics have sunk so low. There is little room for journalism in the profit-crazed entertainment industry that is commercial TV and radio. What about those weapons of mass destruction? Where were the stories about the real estate bubble before the meltdown? When's the last time a major commercial television or radio network did a substantive story on Egypt before the protests began, to give us context and substance? When's the last time there was a story about the status quo corruption that is Washington? Sure, they'll cover casino Jack Abramoff and a congressman who puts bundles of cash in his freezer, but the real story that no one is telling is what is legal. The real story is what Chris Hedges calls the dead hand of corporate power that is rapidly transforming the United States into a feudal state. And when we turn to the place where most actual news is gathered, we find newspapers in a well-documented and rapid decline. As advertising revenues move to the web, print and delivery costs increase, and slash and burn owners sacrifice reporters' jobs at the altar of profit-making. The number of journalists covering state houses has decreased by 31% in the past decade. Testifying in front of the U.S. Congress last year, David Simon, creator of The Wire television show and a former journalist, somberly proclaimed, "The next 10 to 15 years will be halcyon days for local corruption. It's going to be a great time to be a corrupt politician." And while there's encouraging local online news operations springing up in San Diego, Minneapolis, Austin, and here in the Bay Area with people like Lewis, there is little reason to believe that these fine projects will be duplicated in the thousands of communities that desperately need journalism. Such projects take generous local philanthropy combined with strong executive and editorial talent, a rare combination. Beyond the crisis of content that I just described, a quieter, equally dangerous crisis faces our 21st century distribution platform called the Internet. It is the most exciting communications tool in modern history. Its potential cannot be overstated. It allows us to access and share information in ways hard to imagine just 15 years ago. Its light speed transcends geography and time itself. Its two-way capacity makes us active participants. It is fostering positive and social and political movements around the world. It's a huge engine for economic growth. And in the next few years, as speeds increase and technology improves, all media, television, radio, phone service, emerging technologies we haven't even dreamed of, will be delivered by a high-speed internet connection. Computers, televisions, radios, and telephones are merging into the same device. Think about what a game changer this is. Anybody's website could become a television or radio network, breaking open access and distribution of media content. The cost of distribution plummets. Independent, non-commercial voices that have been unable to find a home on cable television or broadcast dials finally have equal footing. Witness the most promising information revolution of our time. But the same corrupt policymaking that has ceded control of our government to K Street lobbyists has put the brilliant potential of internet in grave danger. Phone, cable, and broadcast lobbyists, second in Washington spending only to the pharmaceutical industry, have pressured pliant politicians into actively preventing competition amongst internet service providers like phone and cable companies, leaving 97% of Americans with two or fewer choices for providers. Now, so what, right? If you have a choice between a Ford and a Chevy and no other cars, is that a competitive auto market? The internet provider competition problem has driven up costs and driven down speeds, with the U.S. plummeting from 4th to 22nd compared to other countries in speed and adoption in the past decade. But don't expect the Federal Communications Commission, the federal agency charged with protecting the public interest, to help. Last month, it caved to K Street lobbyists and their puppets in Congress, passing a loophole-ridden rule that would allow phone companies to censor and control the wireless web, slowing down or blocking internet content at will. Competition and consumer choice be damned. Rules affecting wireline connections were a bit better, but still riddled with loopholes. This despite President Obama's promise to take a backseat to no one on net neutrality. The next domino fell soon after when Comcast, the largest cable television and residential high-speed internet provider, was allowed by government regulators to merge last week with programming giant NBC Universal, marking a new kind of what's called vertical media integration. Comcast will point to so-called conditions of the deal applied that prevent the scenario I describe, but they fail to mention that those conditions expire after 7 years. For Comcast, this is a short time to wait before they can have their way. What was created last week is a massive company that owns the distribution network, the wires, and one of the nation's largest content providers. These are two companies that used to and are supposed to engage in hard-nosed negotiations with each other. No longer. The deal allows Comcast to move online video that is currently free behind a paywall. They will now raise prices for NBC content to other cable and satellite providers and innovators like Netflix and Hulu.com. Every American will end up paying more and have fewer choices. And we'll soon see a merger wave with companies like AT&T or Time Warner trying to keep up by acquiring CBS or Disney. 2 years before his administration blessed the Comcast-NBC merger, candidate Barack Obama said, "I strongly favor the diversity of ownership of outlets and protection against excessive concentration of power in the hands of one corporation, interest, or small group," unquote. Another campaign promise broken at the hands of K Street lobbyists. It doesn't have to be this way. I believe in capitalism. I'm fine with NBC Universal being sold. But it is the role of government to ensure that it's done in a way that does not hurt the American people. It is the role of government to put the interests of the people ahead of lobbyists. But that is not the case in modern Washington. And if you make such a claim, if you suggest that NBC should be sold to a different company, if you suggest that the largest internet providers should not be allowed to indiscriminately block or slow down content on the internet in order to maximize profits, if you suggest that insurance and big pharma shouldn't write the healthcare law, if you suggest that Exxon and Chevron shouldn't dictate environmental policy, you will be attacked by a guerrilla army of PR shops and political mercenaries. You will be called a socialist or a radical, you will see your position contorted with no deference to the actual truth. It happens to every one of us on the national level who confronts Washington's elite corporate complex. And it gets worse. As we look towards the internet's future, more dark clouds are gathering. In a few years, high-speed broadband access will be controlled by the cable industry. What does that mean? As the internet delivers more high-definition television, gaming, telemedicine, and other high-bandwidth content, cable internet providers will soon be the only ones with wires fast enough to handle the increased load. Phone companies' DSL service will be too slow. And companies like AT&T and Verizon have just canceled plans to lay high-speed fiber to compete with cable. Before the rise of the elite corporate complex, this would have been an easy fix. Previous monopolies like railroads, oil, they were broken up by government regulators because of clear and obvious harms to the public interest. But today, it's different. Today, President Obama's much-touted national broadband plan doesn't even touch the broadband problem. It's the third rail issue for AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast, so it's a third rail issue for Democrats and Republicans and the majority of Congress. Only what's at stake here isn't pork bellies or corn. What's at stake here is the information system central to a functional democratic system. Is all lost? Is it possible to put this genie back in the bottle? I think so. Just as there are two foundational crises facing our nation, corporate control of government and the lack of an informed electorate, there are two primary reform strategies that can and must succeed in order for these United States to survive. We must make the corporate takeover of government a bona fide political issue in America.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
And now for something completely different.